is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonas Schaefer here on another rainy Tuesday in Baltimore. Jonas, we got a lot to talk about on today's show. It is going to be an offensive line focused show because that might be the Ravens' biggest need for the remainder of the offseason. We're going to talk to Brandon Thorne, who is an offensive line guru, get his thoughts on some of the NFL draft prospects along the O-line. But first, Jonas, let's touch on some news that has impacted the Ravens over the last couple weeks. Jadeveon Clowney, no longer a Baltimore Raven. He hit free agency and he has signed. We thought this might take a little while, but he signs much earlier in the offseason than he did a year ago. And he's going home to the Carolina Panthers.
2 years, $20 million. It had the unfortunate timing of coming just a couple days after John Harbaugh said he was optimistic about JD coming back to Baltimore. Not to be. It's understandable. You know, the salary would have required the Ravens to make some cap moves to free up some money. They certainly have that opportunity. I'm sure they'll avail themselves of that opportunity later if there's a guy that they really need to sign. But, you know, JD is a South Carolina boy. He grew up there, played for the Gamecocks. Obviously, I think they do training camp in South Carolina and obviously play in Charlotte. So a good opportunity for him to go home. I know he's close to his family. I think his partner, his wife's family is also from the area. So you can't begrudge him for that decision to go back home and, you know, be a part of a team that definitely needs someone like him. But it leaves a big hole. You know, the next closest edge rusher on the Ravens, pressure-wise, is Dafe Obe, and he had 20 fewer pressures than Clowney did last year. So as much as offensive line is a need, the premium position in the NFL, probably after quarterback, is edge rusher, and the Ravens right now only have a mix of kind of meh to pretty good. And if this is going to be a team that wins the Super Bowl or contends for the Super Bowl, then you would hope that, you know, Justin Madubuike would have some other help on the outside to get home and to make life miserable for quarterbacks.
Yeah. If you were to tell me when free agency began that Jadeveon Clowney was going to sign early in the offseason, I'd say it's very unlikely that he was going to sign with the Ravens, because we thought maybe the longer this thing was going to go on, that the Ravens would have a better and better chance because of how they like to wait to do business, and because maybe that would indicate that his price tag is dropping. But the fact that he got this deal done at the very end of March means that teams were pretty impressed with his previous 2023 season, having almost 10 sacks, and they were willing to give him a deal longer than a year, which has not been the case for the last couple of years for Jadeveon Clowney. So he ends up going home, but that does leave a pretty massive hole along the defensive line and in terms of sack production. Jonas, I'll put you on the spot here. We saw another premium pass rusher change teams. Hassan Reddick traded to the Jets for a third-round pick that can become a second-round pick if he reaches certain thresholds. Would you have done that deal for 1 year potentially of Hassan Reddick, or the opportunity to extend somebody who's 30 years old?
Wasn't his cap hit something like 14, 15 million?
It was big. It would have required some restructures for the Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, I think they probably would have preferred to have someone like Clowney in house just because of his ability to set the edge against the run as well. It's pretty clear that they're relying on.
What if you knew you were going to lose Clowney as a Clowney replacement?
I think they probably had a pretty good idea going into this that keeping Clowney was going to be unlikely. And I think they would have, you know, handled that accordingly in free agency, in the first two waves of free agency. So it's pretty clear that they're going to rely on Adafe, on a David Ajabo, on Tavius Robinson. I'm sure they have some money in their piggy bank for Kyle Van Noy. Obviously, he's not the high impact player that Clowney is. And but the sack production last year kind of spoke for itself. So probably not going to take an edge rusher in the first round this year, which is really the round thereabouts that you need to take an edge rusher to have them be any kind of level of production. So it's definitely going to be a step back for the pass rush. I mean, I think it's safe to say that. And it's just, you know, that point in the growing process of this team where the whispers from on high come that, you know, we need to trust our young guys. And, Jadeveon Clowney is not a young guy. David Ojabo is. Tavius Robinson is. So it's, you know, obviously a leap of faith that those guys are going to come anywhere close to the production of a Clowney or even a Van Noy if he leaves. But you trust in Chuck Smith. You trust in that defensive infrastructure. You trust in whatever the offense can do to put you in these advantageous situations where you're not, you know, only having to worry about, you know, stopping the run because you're down 14 in the fourth quarter. So it's a big loss. You know, I had him as the second most important loss for the Ravens this offseason behind only Mike McDonald. You know, he was a former number one draft pick for a reason. There are very few people in this league built like Jadeveon Clowney, and it's going to be tough to find someone built like him or just with his level of production next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough to see so many different position groups on paper taking a step back. You know, if you add the pass rush to a category that already includes, you know, wide receivers, which another wide receiver that we touched on last week, who was a free agent that the Ravens were reportedly meeting with, he's off the board. That's Josh Reynolds, former Lions wide receiver, signing with the Denver Broncos on a deal. 2 years, $9 million. Look, I think the Ravens could still use another veteran wide receiver, just like they could still use more pass rush, just like, as we're going to touch on, they could still use a lot along the offensive line. There are so many different position groups. In terms of wide receiver, though, I don't know who else is out there similar to pass rush. I don't know how many impact players are left out there that would make sense for the Ravens to sign. I mean, DJ Chark is still out there. He had over 500 receiving yards last year with Carolina in a pretty terrible offense. Kendrick Bourne, 400 receiving yards in 8 games for the Patriots. Tyler Boyd, Michael Gallup, who reportedly visited with the Ravens last month. Slim pickings, I think you could say. I still think they could use just somebody in there to keep the floor somewhat high, you know, an upgrade over Laquon Treadwell, essentially somebody who maybe makes the team, but, you know, is going to have to compete with a rookie wide receiver. But I just, they need one more guy. I just don't know who is out there that would make sense for them.
At this point, I think you just have to do the cost benefit analysis of, like, is the guy that I'm paying, you know, $3 to $6 million a year going to move the needle more than a guy that I get like in the third round, in the fourth round? You know, the there's such an abundance of talent in the draft at the wide receiver spot pretty much every year that there's a good chance that you can get comparable value at a, you know, pennies on the dollar kind of rate, you know, like someone like, I think Taj Washington is his name, you know, athletic freak out of Virginia, a little bit undersized, but uber productive. You know, that does he do more for you in the eyes of Todd Monken and the eyes of John Harbaugh than someone like Michael Gallup, who is kind of on the last legs of his career, is not the athlete that he was, you know, before he got some of those injuries in Dallas. It's really limited him. I mean, only 418 yards with the Cowboys last year in a good Cowboys offense, you know, catching passes from a almost MVP Dak Prescott. You know, the Ravens always do their homework on wide receivers. It doesn't always work out for them. Just, you know, look at their draft history, but they have to be mindful that, like, you know, spending $5 million on a guy that you could probably get close to value wise in the draft is a very real possibility. So obviously someone like Tyler Boyd is probably a pretty good bet compared to someone that you could get in that third or fourth round. But I don't know how many other guys in free agency you could say that about.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great group. The reason I might like a couple other guys like DJ Chark and Kendrick Bourne instead of Gallup is because you mentioned Gallup playing with great quarterback play and DJ Chark and Kendrick Bourne playing with pretty poor quarterback play. And for them to still be productive in bad offenses would be, to me at least, a better sign that they might have a little bit more left in the tank than somebody who is in a great situation and doesn't perform at all that well. All right, let's talk about the offensive line, because the Ravens have plenty of needs across the board as they head into draft season, with the draft being 3-4 weeks away. But offensive line has to top the list, because they are currently missing 3 of their starters from last year. They traded Morgan Moses away. Kevin Zeitler signed with Detroit. John Simpson signed with the Jets. Ronnie Stanley is essentially entering the last year of his contract. They are going to have short-term needs and long-term needs all along the offensive line. And boy, are they going to have to hit on some draft picks, because I don't think Josh Jones is going to necessarily come in and be John Simpson 2.0. I don't know if Daniel Falele is going to be able to step up and provide as much production as Morgan Moses did last year. They have not a whole lot of solid answers for a position that is hugely important on a team that is looking to repeat another strong offensive season and who has a quarterback that desperately needs to stay upright.
There's a lot riding on this because I think you could argue that the most important investment of their offseason so far, Derrick Henry, you know, if you're discounting the Justin Madubuike signing, is like entirely dependent on just how good this line is. You know, we saw what Derrick Henry was behind a bad offensive line in Tennessee, and it was a kind of ho-hum player, like I think 4.1 yards per carry last year. Obviously, playing with Lamar is a little bit different from playing with Will Levis, from playing with Ryan Tannehill, just in terms of the space that that affords you, but you're not getting the maximum value from Derrick Henry if you're not building a good offensive line in front of him.
Right.
Yeah, obviously, that goes for any running back in this league, but you know, keep on bringing up this word, but the force multiplier of it all. You know, if you are, you know, the value of Derrick Henry almost goes up exponentially. Like, you know, the more yard of separation that you get him at that line of scrimmage, just because of that build up power that he has. You know, you want him to be like a jet taking off. You don't want him to be a little kind of rinky dink, you know, Wright brothers thing. You want him to have full engines go and just bursting through that line. I was going to say Boeing, but then I realized probably need a different brand of jet. So, you know, this line can't be dysfunctional. It has to be competent at the very least. I know there's a lot of misgivings about the state of the offensive line at the end of last year, considering struggles against the Chiefs, considering the sacks that Lamar took in that game. But, you know, we talked to Brandon Thorne, as you guys are about to hear. He thought highly of the offensive line and for good reason. So Lamar gives you a head start. Joe D gives you a great base as a teacher, as you know, someone who's going to tell these guys what's what in the NFL. But just like with, you know, the edge rusher group, this is a group that's probably going to have to take a step back. It doesn't mean that they're going to be the Achilles heel of this offense. It just means that we have to be realistic about what exactly this group might be capable of next year.
Yeah, it's just scary because so much relies on the offensive line. I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson's health is tied pretty closely to how much protection he gets. I know some of the injuries that he has suffered have been freak injuries. However, the fewer hits he's taking, typically the healthier he is going to be over the course of the season. And Derrick Henry in that run game relies so heavily on the offensive line. It's the bedrock of the offense. And it's just scary to look at right now where they stand. They have so much time to be able to fix this, but the draft doesn't offer a whole lot of sure things. You know, it offers a lot of prospects and a lot of potential, especially long-term, but they have some massive, massive short-term needs. And for a position group that is so key to this offense, to go into next year with, you know, right now, Daniel Falele penciled in at right tackle with Patrick McCary backing him up, Ben Cleveland probably, you know, competing with Saleh and Josh Jones for the other two guard spots. You just need to get multiple players in this draft. Let's talk about some players that the Ravens could target here in the draft, because I think they need to look at tackle first and foremost. And typically you see tackles taken before you see interior offensive linemen taken. It is a position that is harder to play. It's harder to find franchise level talent with those positions. So tackles are probably going to be primarily their focus, and it's going to be our focus as well. But Jonas, Eric DaCosta seems to like the talent in this draft at offensive line. And why wouldn't he? Because it looks like there are a whole lot of first round, second round caliber offensive tackles to be had.
Yeah, I mean, the two positions that everyone says are in abundance in this year's draft are offensive line and wide receiver. Guess what? Those are the two positions that the Ravens really, really need. 11 yeah. Offensive linemen, 10 guards, and tackles, primarily in Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 prospects. There are obviously some guys who are going to be out of the Ravens' reach, assuming that they don't trade up. Joe Alt, Olufoshinu, the two headliners of the group. Then you have that next tier where it's probably unlikely that they would fall to the Ravens at 30. Tali Fuaga, J.C. Latham, Troy Faiutanu, Amarius Mims, although, you know, that's a guy who maybe could fall just because of the concerns about the medicals and the inexperience. And then Oregon center, Jackson Powers Johnson, you know, he could be a guard. Maybe the Ravens would consider him, but I think the consensus is that he is best slotted in as a center. And obviously the Ravens are well-suited there with Tyler Linderbaum. And so that leaves, you know, a smaller group of guys that the Ravens could take at number 30. Maybe you trade back a few spots and you could still grab one of these guys or one or two of these guys. Graham Barton, tackle at Duke, who might be better served as a guard. Tyler Guyton, Oklahoma tackle. Kingsley Suamataia from BYU. And then Jordan Morgan, another one of those guys who played tackle at Arizona, but might be best as a guard moving forward.
Jonas, you have some food comparisons with some of the guys that you just mentioned. Why don't I'm just going to sit back and let you cook, pun intended.
What do offensive linemen like to do more than anything? You got to eat.
Yeah,
you got to get fuel in that body. You got to, you know,
for the pancake
balls. Big with the macros. If you're 330 pounds, you got to be having what, like at least 250 grams of protein. So let's talk about food. Graham Barton, Duke, not in love with the idea of any of the teams that I cover taking a guard out of Duke, whether it's in basketball or football, but he seems like a good guy. So we'll be willing to cut him some slack. For me, he is a signature sandwich. All the premium ingredients, great play strength, athleticism, technique, versatility, movement skills. The only red flag is the arm length, the wingspan. That's not a disqualifying factor. You know, you've seen really good players have relatively T-Rex arms. Graham Barton, only 24th in percentile for arm length for all the offensive linemen on mock draftable. But, you know, do you really want a sandwich if you're paying for like a fancy night out? You know, if Graham Barton is not what you want size-wise at a tackle, are you comfortable taking a guard in the first round? And I think that's going to be the issue for some teams is, you know, are we getting this surplus value if we take a guy who's best served inside? You know, that's part of the Brock Bowers discussion. It's like, do we want to spend all this draft capital on a guy who on that second contract, you know, isn't really that much more expensive than he is, you know, at the end of his rookie contract, because the price that you pay for first rounders contract wise is so much higher than it is for anyone else. So that's going to be a decision for the Ravens is Graham Barton premium enough that you can put him in and feel comfortable about your investment in the first round at this very, very critical juncture in the Ravens, you know, Super Bowl window.
How about Tyler Guyton? What food does he compare to?
Tyler Guyton to me, brisket, not just because the big boy is from Texas, but Paul, what do you need for really good, really mouthwatering brisket? What is the essential ingredient?
I mean, it's got to be juicy, not sauce though.
Time. You need time.
Time. Yeah, no, that's fair.
And Tyler Guyton is a guy who is relatively new to the position, and he's. You would have thought that someone 6'8", 300 plus pounds would have been playing offensive line more regularly in high school. But in high school, he primarily worked on the defensive side. He started his career at TCU, didn't play a whole lot, 19 snaps at left tackle in 2021, transferred to Oklahoma, 400 snaps at right tackle, didn't start full-time until last year, and still then only 661 snaps. But, you know, a lot of teams are going to be willing to overlook this lack of seasoning, this you know, deficient play strength, this inconsistent hand placement and his punch and everything, because he is 6'8", because he is 322 pounds, because he moves well. So, you know, we saw the Ravens, it's not apples to oranges, or it's not apples to apples, because the Ravens didn't take Orlando
Brown.
It's not
Brown apples to brisket.
Back in the,
yeah.
they didn't take Orlando Brown until the third round. But remember, even though he was one heck of a success story for the Ravens, he didn't take over until midway through that rookie year. And, you know, are you willing to do what like the Steelers did, for instance, last year with Broderick Jones and take a guy in the first round and then not start him until week five, week eight, because you just don't feel that he's ready and you're worried about protecting Lamar Jackson. So that might be a situation where we're all kind of wondering if the Ravens take Tyler Guyton, when exactly he's starting, why he's not starting by this week, why he's not starting by the next week. But, you know, he's new to this. He's new to this position relatively in the big scheme of things. And so you have to be patient with him and you need to let him cook.
Need to let him cook. Kingsley Suomatia. What is he?
To me, he's lobster. Former five-star recruit at Oregon. And, you know, when you think of lobster, you think of a kind of a ritzy meal, depending on how you're doing it or where you're doing it. And listen, like, pedigree matters to these coaches. That's why, you know, when you look at these draft guides, a lot of them, or pretty much all of them, mention where a guy rated in high school. You know, where was he on Rivals? Where was he on 24/7? Was he a two-star? Was he a five-star? Because I think that athletic pedigree matters to coaches. And, you know, Suomataia, despite being a BYU guy, you may think, oh, he's, you know, kind of a diamond in the rough. No, he was a big timer when he got to Oregon, and he was a big timer going into last year. You know, he was number three on Bruce Feldman's list of college football freaks. He, at 6'5", 318 pounds, as a freshman, was hitting 21.5 miles per hour on the GPS, which is just absurd. So, you know, he has that kind of next level athleticism, but like with lobster, it's going to take a lot of work to kind of bear the fruit of what exactly you're trying to get. You're going to need some patience in terms of like getting him to process plays, technique. He's, you know, vulnerable to kind of defenders crossing his face and getting inside of him. So there's a lot to like with what he has physically. The sticker shock might be a lot because you're kind of wondering if you're getting what you're paying for. But as with Guyton, you know, this might be a situation where, despite everything he has physically, you have to wonder about, does he, you know, fit the plan? Does he fit the timetable for what this Ravens team wants to do? Is he going to be able to go in there year one and at least be competent? Because right now, you know, if he were more refined, there'd be no doubt he'd be a first rounder. But right now, there's obviously some holes on tape that, you know, have the analysts having him be as a kind of fringe first round, second round guy.
Last but not least, Arizona tackle / guard Jordan Morgan. What food is he?
He's meatloaf, baby. he's meatloaf. You think about it, relative to these other guys, relative to these other foods, inexpensive. You know, you're not paying top dollar for meatloaf at a deli or a restaurant. Maybe you prefer it as a leftover. Jordan Morgan, probably more likely as a day two guy at this point. You know, the Ravens, it should be noted, went to Arizona's pro day and spent a lot of time with Jordan Morgan. So he would definitely be a guy who they could consider with that first round pick, might seriously be considering with that first round pick, but there's a lot of stuff in meatloaf and there's a lot of stuff in Jordan Morgan's knee. He's had a season ending ACL injury a couple years ago. I think he had another season ending injury, the nature of which was undisclosed, high ankle sprain. So you kind of wonder what you're getting with all that, with that medical history. The Ravens typically have taken, you know, clean prospects injury-wise in that first round. And obviously, you know, they're going to have to do their medical rechecks and talk with whoever they know at Arizona to make sure that, you know, he is as close to as good as new as possible. When you're investing that level of draft pick in a guy, whether it's first round, second round, whatever it's going to be. But, you know, maybe he's kind of more the Ravens speed in the second round as a potential, you know, guard. You know, I think we talked with Brandon about him, and maybe in a system where you have that 50-50 run pass split and you don't have to worry about him dropping into pass protection every single play, you feel a little bit better. You can, you know, let him cook as a run blocker, where he would be better served out wide at that tackle spot. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about just what you're getting if you're investing a first round pick in a guy who has these injury considerations and all, and also because of his size and, you know, relative lack of athleticism to these other guys, might be better served as a guard.
You just mentioned the interview that we had with Brandon Thorne, and that is coming up in just a bit. But first, please give us a like, a thumbs up, a subscribe. If you write us a good review, we will read it out here on the Banner Ravens podcast, and you can watch along each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. All right, let's get to our interview with offensive line guru Brandon Thorne, who provided a little bit more context on all of the offensive line draft prospects that could be in play for the Ravens.
We are delighted to have kicking off our series of draft previews, Brandon Thorne, offensive and defensive line analyst. I'm sure you've seen some film cutups of him from him on Twitter. Does a great job breaking down offensive line play, defensive line play, edge defender play. And we're delighted to have him today to help break down the Ravens offensive line and who they might look after in the NFL draft. Brandon does a great job evaluating offensive line and defensive line prospects for Bleacher Report. He also has a tremendously valuable newsletter and podcast called Trench Warfare, where he breaks down line play around the NFL. It's on Substack, $8 a month, $85 a year, both tremendous value if you are just a real dork about the position. And we're excited to have him. And Brandon, I guess before we kind of dig into who might be in play for the Ravens at number 30, or perhaps, you know, even lower if they do indeed trade out of that spot, and kind of looking back at your rankings from last year about where the Ravens offensive line held up, you know, you had three above average starters: Ronnie Stanley, Tyler Linderbaum, Kevin Zeitler, a solid starter in Morgan Moses, and then a question mark obviously at left guard. We didn't know what John Simpson would become. You've seen the attrition there at the spot. We saw Ronnie Stanley have some issues being, you know, with his ability to anchor. We saw Kevin Zeitler leave, Morgan Moses get traded. Three open spots now from a line that the consensus was pretty good. So as you kind of take this big picture perspective on where the Ravens are right now, are you more optimistic, pessimistic? I mean, how big of a rebuild is this for the Ravens, and how, you know, how much of a challenge do you think it is for them to kind of get to the level that they were at in 2023?
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a blank slate than I can recall for a Ravens offensive line. So in a sense, you know, somewhat pessimistic, but kind of cautiously optimistic just based on their ability to restock the position, just positions in general, you know, and just kind of just how well run they are as a front office and how they find value in places that others can and things like that. And their ability to develop guys and identify talent in the trenches in particular is, you know, really good. So, you know, like I said, I'm pretty optimistic, but at the same time, you know, it's there's at least, like you said, three openings. I would assume, just looking at the depth chart, that, you know, at least one of these guys that's on the depth chart currently will take one of those spots. I'm sure they're hoping for maybe two, but, you know, I think safely we could say one of these guys will take one of those three spots. And then you probably have to get two guys in this draft that can at least, you know, compete for a job. So I would expect the offensive line to be a point of emphasis in this draft early and often, you know, throughout.
I'm glad that you mentioned the Ravens wanting to go that direction early. That's something Jonas and I have been preaching since the Morgan Moses trade. And even before that Morgan Moses trade, we knew offensive line was going to be a priority. And based on what Eric DaCosta has said this offseason, it is going to be a priority in the draft. Okay. It seems like this is the draft to get somebody, even with the 30th overall pick, because right now you have 13 linemen rated as potential impact players or better. So that's like a second round grade or higher. Mm-hmm. What do you think the options will be like for the Ravens at 30? And do you think that the options, the availability to get somebody who is an impact offensive lineman at 30 is greater than it has been in years past?
Yeah, I to answer that last part, I do. I think that there's probably a pretty good chance that you can get a, you know, potential impact starter, day one kind of starter caliber guy. And I think just looking at kind of the overall board that I have of offensive linemen, you know, I think at this point, at pick 30, you're probably looking at best case, maybe somebody like Jordan Morgan, you know, maybe Kingsley Suamatia, possibly Tyler Guyton, Patrick Paul. Those are probably the guys. Cooper Beebe starts to come into play. He's more so probably day two. You know, Dominic Pooney is a guy I'm sure that they like. He's kind of a stylistic fit. He's like day two. So yeah, you start getting into some of those guys, but like high end pick 30 guys that would be there, I would say Jordan Morgan, Kingsley Suamitiya are probably two guys, you know, that that come to mind that have a shot at being there.
Brandon, I think one of the assets that that could be prioritized by the Ravens in this year's draft is that interchangeability. You know, Jordan Morgan, obviously, three-year starter at tackle at Arizona, but maybe projected best as a guard. When you consider just big picture, you know, how difficult it is, or maybe kind of scheme dependent it is for a guy who's been tackle all of his life, certainly in college, potentially being slotted into the interior with a possibility of moving back out to tackle, perhaps, you know, when Ronnie Stanley moves on after next year. Is it easier said than done, you know, kind of going from tackle to guard? Does it depend on what side you're lining up on? Does it depend on, you know, kind of who you're playing alongside? I mean, what do you kind of make of that possibility, which is something that obviously the Ravens are going to probably have to consider as they evaluate these guys?
Yeah, and I think Morgan and Suamitiya could, you know, play right, you know, as well. So that's another possibility. Suamitiya has played right, but yeah, I mean, I think all of the above, all those things you just said, you know, factor into it. It is a case by case basis, you know, for the most part. It depends on, like you said, I mean, you made some good points, you know, who are they playing next to? You know, you'd feel a lot better if somebody like Kevin Zeitler was there, if you're inserting a rookie right tackle, you know, just as an example. So like who you play next to, you know, is a factor into it, who the offensive line coach is, his track record of development of dealing with guys like that and handling that sort of situation factors into it. And then the individual player that you're talking about, you know, I think if he doesn't have the tape at that projected position, then obviously it's much more of a projection. But then you just look at individual skill set. Typically, you know, guys who play tackle, who you're projecting inside, who haven't played inside, they're going to be good with their hands just because things happen quicker inside. So I think being really good with your hands is you know, a huge help. Obviously, play strength, I think, is a big part of it as well, just because of the body types that you're going to be dealing with inside and just some of the things that you're being asked to do. And then, of course, the scheme that you're going into, how much protection do you have in terms of pass protecting, you know, like in terms of the run pass split. And then if, you know, if you're a run first offense that is heavy in play action and RPOs, like a kind of a typical Shanahan-esque type of scheme is, then, you know, you're probably a little bit more apt to translate quicker just because you're not going to be executing a whole lot of drop back pass. Which is, I think, the most difficult part of playing offensive line from an individual perspective. So, like, all these things play into it. But with Morgan, I think he is good with his hands, and I think he's really strong. So that's why I have him projected inside. And then some of his weaknesses at tackle, I think, you know, don't totally go away, but they get mitigated going inside as well. And then Suamitiya is more of a true tackle. Yeah, I think both those guys could work here.
One guy we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about has been Georgia's Amarius Mims, because he is the kind of prospect that I think fans can look at and dream on and say he could be anything. He's kind of a mystery box, given his lack of experience and given how big he is. He's 6'7", 340. That seems like he could be a mammoth stalwart on the offensive line for a team. But there are obviously reasons why he probably won't be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick, and could make his way all the way back to 30 or maybe drop out of the first round. And it's because of that lack of experience. How has he looked in those limited snaps for Georgia? And also, would you have concerns about somebody who is that inexperienced and also that large on the offensive line, taking that guy with a first round pick?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends. For me, you know, I have him as kind of a fringe first round grade. You know, he's my fourth overall tackle in the class, and with a couple of these high, bigger name guys projected inside. So, you know, I am pretty high on him, though, considering he has 8 or 9 starts or whatever it is. Just because I think the big thing that you start with him is when you watch all his film, he doesn't have a lot of bad habits. You know, whereas you contrast that with somebody like Tyler Guyton, who also is very inexperienced, you know, different body type and things like that, but a lot of pro caliber, like starting level traits physically. Right. I think Guyton does have some bad habits in pass protection in particular, and the run game, footwork stuff, opening up too early when he's on the edge against wide rush alignments, getting beat across his face. And not that those things are like death knells, you know, for his pro prospects, but I just think there's a little bit more that you have to kind of unwind with him. And then he is kind of a blank slate otherwise as well. He's just a guy who's just big, fluid, moves well, naturally strong, but there's a lot of nuance there that needs to be, you know, that needs to come to bear there for him. And whereas with Mims, yeah, he is a blank slate, but I don't see a lot of bad habits with him. He's just more of a true kind of blank slate. And for me, that's a little bit more encouraging, why I kind of give him the edge over Guyton. And then he also is just a little bit bigger, you know, than Guyton as well, which, you know, I don't think hurts considering how well he moves. And, but yeah, you know, just, I would love to take that swing on Amarius Mims. You know, I just think it depends also on the coaching staff, and ideally he goes to a place that has a good infrastructure, you know, in terms of the offensive line room. Having a good veteran at tackle would be great, which you guys do have in Ronnie Stanley. I think that would be important. And then a veteran offensive line coach, which you guys have. I think he's like the second or third most tenured offensive line coach in the league. So, yeah, I mean, having stuff like that where there's a lot of kind of just an established kind of offensive line culture there, you know, I think that that will be really important. Whereas, you know, as opposed to putting him into like a brand new staff with, you know, he's like a pillar of the line day one, that's a little more risky, you know? So it does kind of come down to that with him, you know, where he goes. But man, you don't see a lot of guys that look like him, move like him. And, you know, from everything I've heard, you know, there's a lot to like off the field as well. And so he's really young. All these guys are really young, but yeah, he's very intriguing. And I that's why I think fringe first round is ideal, and that's going to get a natural bump. I would assume he's going to go in the first round.
Yeah, I think so. A guy who's probably way higher on the refinement spectrum is Graham Barton. And Brandon, mm-hmm. for anyone who's a total nerd about this stuff, you did an hour-long film room with him, just kind of breaking down some of his tape. Seems like a great guy to talk to, just from everything that I've seen that he does media appearance-wise. It seems like the word that people use to describe him as a prospect is clean. You know, that there's not a lot of fat on him as a you know, prospect profile wise. Do you have a preference for what kind of system he ends up in? And do you have a preference for where you think he projects best, whether it's being a tackle, being a guard? You know, I think some people have even said he could play center. Do you have any, you know, personal ideal landing spot for a guy like Graham Barton?
Yeah, I mean, I think he could potentially play tackle, although I think long-term projection, it's cleaner to project him inside to guard or center. I would like to see him at guard first, just because I think guard has probably a little bit more value. It's probably a little bit more difficult to find like a high-end guard than center. Not to minimize center, I think there's a lot of importance there too, and I think he could do that, but I would love to see him play guard, just kind of in that mold of a high level college left tackle that gets kicked inside, you know, where there's a laundry list of those guys, you know, as you know. So, I see him in that sort of mold. He's a guy who's, interestingly enough, not getting really mentioned, but when you watch his film, the first game of the year against Clemson, I mean, that tape is awesome. And a lot of people cite that tape as showing like what makes him such a great prospect. And I agree. You watch him throughout the year, though. He was hurt a lot of the year. I mean, the FSU tape was really nice against Jared Verse. But aside from those two games, I think there's a lot of kind of like more up and down than you would expect. I actually thought his tape last year might have been even better. And there's kind of an argument that he could have came out last year and been maybe drafted right, even a little bit higher. But I think that's kind of reversed course a little bit at this point based on his pro day. And, you know, he kind of blew it up there, solidified a lot of the, you know, a lot of the hype on him there. So in the end, it probably comes out in the wash, like it doesn't really matter. But I just think that that's kind of important context to consider as well, because he's been really good for a few years. He has 39 career starts, you know, five at center, the rest at left tackle. But yeah, I mean, he's, you know, I do think a pretty clean prospect. You know, he's a very like stubborn, and I have this in my report, he's like a stubborn, sticky kind of blocker. You know, once he gets on you, it's very difficult to get him off of you, and that's through his use of leverage, body positioning, grip strength, and athletic ability to adjust on the fly and stay attached to blocks and finish blocks. And I think that that's consistent throughout his tape against high-level competition as well. So he checks a lot of boxes. He's very tough. You know, there's not a lot to really poke holes at. And in terms of scheme, I think he's kind of scheme agnostic. You know, it doesn't really matter. I don't think it matters at all. So, yeah, he's a really good prospect, really good player. He reminds me a lot, if people remember, Forrest Lamp coming out. That's my comp. And obviously, Forrest Lamp, when he got to the pros, it just was kind of bizarre how it all worked out. He got hurt right away and then just never recovered from that. I still don't know the full story on Forrest Lamp, but he was really good. I think it was Western Kentucky or whatever. Yeah, he was a really good player, left tackle, undersized a little bit, but so anyway, yeah, hopefully, you know, as a pro it works out better for Barton, but as a prospect, a lot of similarities there. And yeah, you know, I'm a big fan.
Last one for you, Brandon. Talked about a couple guys here in BYU's Kingsley Suomatia, who hopefully I'm getting the pronunciation right, right. And Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton, both guys that you seem pretty high on, both guys that could be in range for the Ravens at number 30 overall. Do you think the Ravens would have a preference between these two guys? And if so, who do you think would fit them better?
You know, I don't know that I have like a clear cut answer here. These guys are very tightly graded for me, you know, the fifth and sixth overall tackles in the class. I give a slight edge to Guyton, generally speaking, just because I think he moves a little bit better than Suomatia does. However, Suomatia, you know, I think he has a little bit more experience, a 2-year starter, you know, at right and left. So he has that going for him. I think he's probably a little bit more strong than Tyler Guyton is in terms of play strength. So there's that. And, you know, I think my initial reaction would probably be Suomatia, just because of that play strength aspect, kind of, you know, can assert himself a little bit more as a run blocker than Tyler Guyton could, whereas Guyton's more of kind of a fluid, loose mover type. But Suomatia, I think, would fit kind of that Baltimore mold a little bit more, and you could kind of slide him in at right tackle. And, you know, I think that would make a lot of sense, and it wouldn't be surprising if he went there.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that they can do. I think one of the fun things about
there's options.
The spectrum of guys is like, you know, there were games that they were gap heavy last year, that there were games that they were zone heavy. So if you're looking for a particular type of run blocker, you don't really have to limit yourself, because we don't know what this Todd Monken offense might look like in year two. So you really have to consider all possibilities for them. But I guess you just have to make sure that they can actually step in and compete in year one, because the Ravens don't have a lot of time to find a guy who might be the Morgan Moser successor or the Kevin Zeiler successor. You just got to make sure that you can find someone with a high enough floor to compete and step in, hopefully right away. But Brandon, thank you so much for your time. Like we said at the top, you do great work. Your breakdowns on Bleacher Report are awesome. Your stuff on Trench Warfare is great. Obviously, you're a highly recommended follow on Twitter for anyone who likes to see pancakes or chops or anything that's a part of the trade. So we thank you so much for your time, and best of luck for this next month. We hope it's not super busy for you and more rewarding than anything.
Thank you guys. I appreciate you having me, and it was fun. You know, if you want to have me back sometime, let me know. Be happy to do it. Maybe after the draft, they get a couple guys, we could talk about it.
Thanks again to Brandon Thorne for joining us on the Banner Ravens podcast. That just about does it for our show today, but we have plenty more draft previews coming your way over the next 3 weeks and 2 days, because that's when the NFL draft kicks off. We're going to touch on wide receivers next week. We'll get into some other position groups, maybe some defense that the Ravens could be looking at. But Jonas, as of today, this might be our last one on a Tuesday at 11 a.m., at least for this week, because next week the Ravens are having a nice little luncheon. They're hosting us. Isn't that nice? At Tuesday at 11 a.m. They knew when we were recording the podcast, and they said, we're going to do it right then and there.
Do you know what's on the menu? Brisket?
Lobster? Is it sandwiches? Brisket? Lobster?
Lobster? Yeah. it's in the Ravens cafeteria, so they do a good job. I think they graded that pretty well on those NFLPA surveys. So I'm not sure if we're going to get the premium ingredients. We might get some of the day 2, day 3 stuff, but it's a nice treat every once in a while.
As long as it's not like the undrafted free agent stuff. That just about does it for our show today. Please like, review, rate, subscribe. I think we'll be back either Monday or Wednesday next week, so stay tuned. Anywhere that you get your podcast, for the Banner Ravens podcast, at @Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I'm @PaulMancano and also @AllBannerSports, and subscribe to the Baltimore Banner. Jonas mentioned earlier in the podcast his article where he lists all of the areas that the Ravens are losing players and losing coaches, and he ranks all of them. So it is a painful article perhaps for Ravens to read. For Ravens fans to read, but $1 for 6 months is where you can get that and so much more from Kyle Goon and Gianna Han on the BaltimoreBanner.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Catch you next time.